Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of four episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
Over the last few days, Congress has staged these dramatic readings of private communications from inside the Trump White House on January 6th, 2021.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. We are here to address...
Liz Cheney, Republican from Wyoming, was the first to take the microphone on Monday.
These text messages leave no doubt the White House knew exactly what was happening here at the Capitol.
Most of us don't get the chance to muck around in the DMs of the politically connected. But what was clear this week is that members of the January 6th Select Committee, they do.
Dozens of texts, including from Trump administration officials, urged immediate action by the president. Quote, POTUS has to come out firmly and tell the protesters to dissipate. Someone is going to get killed.
So the interesting thing is that we really don't know a whole lot about what actually happened in the Oval Office, in the White House, during those first few hours as the attack on the Capitol unfolded.
Nicholas Wu has been reporting on these hearings for Politico.
We know what didn't happen, right? We didn't hear that much from the president. We didn't see, a military response or anything like that. And so this gives us some of the clearest picture we have yet on what they were talking about there and what sort of information they were getting.
What was most surprising to you?
Yeah, I mean, that just the panic that you could see in these messages.
He's got to condemn this shit ASAP. The Capitol Police tweet is not enough, Donald Trump Jr. texted.
You have the president's own son, Donald Trump Jr., saying, Trump has to condemn this, there's an expletive there, ASAP.
Indeed. According to the records, multiple Fox News hosts knew the president needed to act immediately.
I mean, it goes to show quite how close a lot of these ties were between, these Fox hosts, certain lawmakers that were frantically texting, saying like, the president needs to stop this ASAP, and, relaying updates from what was going on there.
He is destroying his legacy, Laura Ingraham wrote.
So whose phone were these texts from?
They were from the phone of White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows. As the panel members see it, all roads are really leading back to Mark Meadows.
Today on the show, how this week the spotlight came to shine so brightly on Mark Meadows, Trump's former chief of staff. He is refusing to testify in front of Congress, but his DMs are clear as day. I'm Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next? Stick around. This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Before we get into what Mark Meadows' texts show, let's take a step back to summer of 2021. That's when the House of Representatives approved the creation of a select committee to investigate just what happened on January 6th in Washington, D.C. This committee is made up of 9 members, mostly Democrats, though Republicans Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger have joined, too. They've gathered thousands of pages of documents, interviewed hundreds of witnesses, But this week's texts have been explosive because it's the first time the public has been able to see what members of Donald Trump's inner circle were thinking as the Capitol was under siege. Nicholas Wu says these are not going to be the last revelations you read about because this committee is working fast.
What they're really pressing for is to release some kind of report and hold public hearings sometime, maybe as early as the spring next year, to present their findings on, you know, what happened on January 6th and to try to get as much of it out into the public eye as possible. The interesting thing here, though, is that Democrats are really running up against the clock with their work on this committee.
Why?
There's some expectation that the House of Representatives will flip next year. This is kind of the way it goes. Like in the 2022 midterms, the president's party usually loses a lot of seats in the House in midterm years. And Republicans have made their feelings very clear about this committee for the most part and want to end its work. And so they're trying to wrap things up before then.
How did you know the committee was circling around former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows? Was it just a given?
Yes. I mean, he's been in their sights for some time. He was one of the very first people that they subpoenaed, along with, you know, Steve Bannon, for example. And so, he's one of these senior Trump world figures who's kind of the big fish for the committee. But at least for now, the fact that the committee and the House held him in contempt means that they're probably not going to get his testimony in the near future.
Huh. Can you give me just like a brief biographical sketch of Meadows? Like, he joined the White House in 2020, so he's kind of late to the White House party. But who was he as chief of staff?
So Meadows as chief of staff, if anything, was someone who was a pretty close confidant to the president. I mean, like, as a lot of these messages and documents show, he was someone who was trusted by a lot of people in Trump's orbit to handle a lot of these streams of information. He's certainly a high-profile Trump world figure and someone who then becomes a pretty big target for the committee to go after just because he was in the room for so many of these big conversations leading up to January 6th and, in the months beforehand.
I've always thought of Mark Meadows as kind of a chameleon. Like, I remember when President Trump was diagnosed with COVID, there was this kerfluffle over how serious the diagnosis was. And it was very clear that Mark Meadows was playing both sides of that story, publicly saying that the president was in great shape and reviewing documents, and then privately off the record telling reporters, like, listen, this is serious. And it was sort of hard to know, like, who's the real Mark Meadows here?
Yeah. I mean, I remember there was a somewhat infamous incident where he's saying on camera that, publicly, that things were fine. And then, yes, not realizing that he was still on camera telling a bunch of reporters that it was quite the opposite. And, with regards, though, to a lot of this, these messages that the select panel is releasing. There is certainly some chameleon-like element of his communications here. So one email that the select committee had released over the weekend showed Meadows actually telling one of his associates that the National Guard, the day before January 6th, was on standby to protect, quote, pro-Trump people. And, you know, that's kind of a startling revelation in and of itself, but you know, what we don't know is the actual context for that, right? Like, is this Meadows kind of spitballing and trying to reassure someone? Was he actually talking to the National Guard? There's a whole lot about this that, you know, in isolation, yes, is kind of chameleon-like and could represent all these different sides that he could be playing here. And, you know, without hearing from Meadows himself, you know, we don't get the full picture there.
So this is why it's important for the committee to actually talk to this person, because the texts, it's hard to know what to make of them because they're all over the place and lacking context.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there was this other message that the committee put out where Meadows actually appears to have texted members of Congress to try to connect Trump himself with all these state lawmakers that were trying to overturn the election in their own state legislatures. Clearly we have Meadows serving as some sort of conduit here, but, you know, to what end?
And it's not just texts, right? Like, didn't Meadows also turn over a PowerPoint presentation that was circulating around the White House?
Correct. So there was a 30-something page PowerPoint presentation that was part of all these documents turned over by Meadows to the committee. But again, this is one of those things where, you know, the provenance of it, it seems a little unclear. There was some reporting that it kind of bubbled up through these, you know, more conspiracy theory quarters of the world, and then, you know, got sent to Meadows. And it doesn't seem like Meadows actually did anything with it, right? This was just one of these, you know, one analogy would be like, you know, thinking about all of the crazy things that fill your inbox every day, right? Like
it's spam.
Yeah, spam almost. Like, you know, it's one of those things that you might be sent, and yes, it certainly says something about the situation. If some person thought that they could send this to Meadows, it doesn't quite seem like it's as severe as, you know, that PowerPoint has been played up on some parts of Twitter, right?
Well, this spam does include the option of declaring a national security emergency and seizing paper ballots on January 6th.
Sure. Yeah, and we saw all of these sorts of conspiracy theory things floating around those weeks. I mean, you know, you'll remember there was that infamous picture of you know, Mike Lindell, the MyPillow guy, walking into the Oval Office with that binder that a photographer got a picture of, where it was like, you know, step one, declare martial law, right? Like,
right.
It adds to the overall portrait of all of this stuff that was swirling around, and is certainly interesting. But I personally think the more interesting revelations in a lot of these documents, yeah, are all of these communications with lawmakers.
Yeah. So Meadows has turned over documents, text messages, and what seems unclear right now is that the select committee is saying he had also agreed to testify, but then he pulled out. Meadows, or his lawyer, is saying that's not the case, and I've never agreed to testify. What is your take on this back and forth?
So there are some weird semantics going on there over whether you're coming in to testify or whether you're coming in for an interview with the committee. You know,
slicing it thin here.
Really, really slicing it thin. Meadows' side was always talking about how, you know, it was a voluntary interview that they wanted to come in for. It wasn't a deposition under the subpoena, right? And they would voluntarily come in to talk about non-privileged things and things that they had agreed to talk about.
Is the difference being under oath or not?
Yeah, to a certain degree. And, you know, the committee, you know, never really agreed to that. They made it pretty clear that they wanted to ask about things that Meadows' side thought would be privileged. And so, you know, we had this super tentative handshake agreement from both sides a few weeks ago that then, yeah, totally collapsed a couple weeks ago and then kicked off this whole motion to eventually hold Meadows in contempt.
So basically, Meadows seems to be saying, I'd agreed to talk, but I don't want to open up the possibility that maybe I lie under oath. So I don't want it to be real testimony.
To a certain degree, I think the bigger issue is that Meadows wanted to circumscribe what he could talk about, right? Like,
he wanted to set the terms.
Right. He wanted to set the terms and say, you know, certain topics that could be related to my conversations with the White House are going to be off limits. Now, the committee, you know, from the beginning, one, didn't recognize any of his claims of privilege, and two, said that, like, you know, Meadows, at the same time he was trying to set these terms for what he was going to say to the committee, right, was also going around and publishing his book on his time as the chief of staff. And, you know, as committee members that I had talked to saw it, like, that was a totally contradictory point. How could you go and say you can't talk to the committee about your time in the White House while at the same time you have a book where you're doing exactly that?
There's something else in this statement from Meadows' lawyer that I thought was interesting. The lawyer is claiming that Mark Meadows, as a witness, he is not licensed to waive executive privilege claimed by the former president. What does that mean? That doesn't seem to be true.
Well, I think this was part of Meadows's position, or Meadows's attorney's position rather, all along, right? Like, they, you know, from the beginning have said that the subpoena couldn't necessarily be upheld in the first place because, you know, he was this former official to the president and would be shielded by all of this privilege and, yes, could not waive it because Trump had asserted executive privilege. You know, there's the bigger legal question of whether a former president himself can actually assert executive privilege. And so it gets into a lot of relatively uncharted legal territory. There just hasn't been that many situations like this before.
These texts getting read into the record, it seems to me like it's kind of a pressure campaign by the Select Committee, like to show people Meadows clearly knows something that's in our interest, and this is why we want to compel him to testify. Is that how you see it too?
That's definitely part of it. I mean, by releasing these messages, they're just, I mean, at this point, a lot of hope of actually getting his testimony has collapsed, right? So now they're using these texts and reading them into the public record as a way of laying out their case for, you know, here's what we have right now, and look, we could have even more if Meadows actually came in to talk to us. But in the meantime, you have texts that are, you know, rather embarrassing to these, you know, for example, those Fox hosts or Donald Trump Jr. Or, you know, if and when the names of those members of Congress who were texting Meadows come out to them as well.
We'll be right back.
If you want to understand what is happening in the United States right now, you really need to understand what's happening with the courts, the law, and the Supreme Court. The battle between democracy and whatever this cage match is that we're witnessing, it's going to be won and lost at the ballot box, but it's also going to be won and lost in the courtrooms. I'm Dahlia Lithwick. I host Slate's legal podcast, Amicus, and we are doubling our output, bringing you weekly episodes from here on in, because how else can we keep an eye on the many trials of Donald Trump, the conservative legal movement's assaults on our rights, the Supreme Court's latest slate of environmental gutting, gun safety eviscerating cases on the docket? So follow Amicus wherever you get your podcasts, new episodes dropping every Saturday morning.
The text messages that came out this week from the Select Committee, they aren't just from January 6th. There are messages from months beforehand showing the way members of Congress, so far unidentified, strategized with Trump's chief of staff. These Congress people, they send Mark Meadows ideas for how to make the election results more favorable for Trump. And these texts show some of these members were trying to make sure their communications were not being traced. One representative simply tells Meadows to check his Signal, the encrypted messaging app, which the Select Committee can't access at all. Yeah, I wonder if you've had a chance to talk to members of Congress about their reactions to the information the committee has been sharing. Because as you've said, there's this funny two-step going on where we know Donald Trump Jr. is saying some things. We know, you know, these Fox hosts are saying some things. But so far, these Congress members seem to be demurring about their fellow members and what they were saying to Mark Meadows, which is kind of interesting. Like, it's it's telling their fellow members, like, we know what you did last summer, only it's January 6th.
Leader McConnell actually got asked about this yesterday and said that basically that he wanted, that he was interested in seeing how things play out with this. You know, he said that he wasn't in contact with Mark Meadows that day and you know, thought it was interesting to know who actually was talking with Meadows and other White House officials as they were pleading for Trump to speak out against the attack.
Do we know anything about who these members are who were in communication with Meadows, or just nothing?
We don't as of yet. I mean, they're, you know, based on the content of the messages and what was being said publicly by some members at that time about a lot of these election conspiracy theories, you might be able to make some inferred guesses, but, you know, it's not more than that at this point. But for their part, the committee has made clear that they actually do intend to release the identities of some of these people soon.
Okay, so let's talk about what happens now. The House referred this contempt charge against Mark Meadows to the Department of Justice. So what are the next steps?
Well, now we just kind of have to wait and see what happens. So Meadows is the second person after Steve Bannon that the full House has held in contempt as part of this investigation. And Bannon was indicted by the Justice Department just a few weeks after for contempt of Congress. We'll have to wait and see what exactly they decide to do with Meadows, because, you know, while yes, there are all of these questions about privilege and the like, Bannon was a little bit of an outlier in how these cases work. Bannon, you know, had refused to come in at all with the committee. He did not turn over any documents. He did not come in for a deposition. He did not even come in to assert his Fifth Amendment rights or to assert privilege. Meadows, on the other hand, had talked with the committee through his lawyer. He had, in an attempt to avoid contempt, turned over these thousands of pages of emails and documents and the like. And as we see now, that sort of blew back a little bit on him. So this will definitely be a harder charging decision for the Justice Department.
Because he gets points for participation?
Right. Like, obviously, there's no such thing as, like, partial credit for, you know, subpoena compliance. But at the same time, like, you know, this will be part and parcel of the actual charging decision that is eventually made.
I'm glad you brought up the fact that Steve Bannon's approach was so, so different, because Bannon, he seemed almost gleeful about this contempt charge. Like, he showed up for court talking about his podcast. Like, he almost just seemed happy to be there. And Meadows seems really different to me in that chameleon-ness comes through, where he's shared some documents, he's shared some texts, not everything. I don't understand how that helps him, though. Like, it doesn't seem like he's picked a lane. Like, I want to be anti-January 6th Select Committee or pro it. And I don't know if you can do that.
Yes. I mean, it's definitely a tricky balancing act for Meadows, especially as someone who is so close to all of these Trump world figures. But the tricky thing with Meadows, too, is that there had been all of this reported angst in Trump world around these revelations in this book. And then, you know, a few days later, we see him drop this handshake agreement with the Select Committee, and then they move forward with contempt. And so it goes back to what we mentioned a little bit earlier, right? This whole chameleon-esque element of Meadows, you know, how exactly he's trying to make it through this and while exactly trying to satisfy all sides.
For the committee, is holding Meadows in contempt sort of like putting a head on a pike and basically saying, we will do this if you refuse to cooperate with us? Like, they must have tons of other witnesses who they're going through a similar process with.
Exactly. The thing to remember about these sorts of criminal contempt of Congress cases is that the goal by members of Congress in doing this is not to put people in jail like tomorrow, right? The goal is to show that, yes, like, this is what happens to you if you don't comply.
Can Mark Meadows change course here? Like, could he wake up tomorrow and just say, you know what? I'd like to cooperate. Are there no backseas here?
You know, yeah, there's, it's not, he can't, like, you know, control Z, right, and undo. But that's something that the committee is really hopeful for, that, yeah, he'll wake up and say that I have changed my mind. The contempt decision has made me change course. But that doesn't look like it'll be the case. In various TV appearances through the week, he has talked up some of his opposition to the Select Committee and said that they're out to get Trump and the like. And so that doesn't sound like someone who is going to change his mind here.
Nicholas Wu, thank you so much for all your reporting on this.
And thank you so much for having me.
Nicholas Wu covers Congress for Politico. And that's our show. What Next is produced by Daniel Hewitt, Elena Schwartz, Carmel Delshad, and Mary Wilson. We are led by Allison Benedict and Alicia Montgomery. And I'm Mary Harris. Go find me on Twitter. Say hello. I'm at Mary's Desk. In the meantime, you're going to want to stay tuned to this feed, because tomorrow our Friday show will be here. That's What Next TBD with Lizzie O'Leary. You're not going to want to miss it. But then I'll catch you bright and early on Monday. Talk then.